We're on Daf Nun Beis Omid Aleph, about two-thirds of the way down. Hasus B'Sher, and the two dots quote the Mishnah that Hasus Yotze B'Sher, that the horse goes out with a collar, and all animals that wear a collar may go out with a collar and may be pulled by a collar. Kol Bali Hasher Yotzim b'sher, v'nim shachim b'sher. So the Gemara wants to know what the Mishnah has in mind. And the Gemara is going to quote a machlokas regarding this. My yotzim umaynim shachim. What is this double language? The animal goes out with the collar and it is pulled by the collar. Omar afuna. O yotzim kruchim, o nimshachim. Kruchim means that you wrap around their neck not just the ring, the collar, but also the strap. It means, in the case of kruchim, that there's no way that you can pull the animal by pulling the strap because the strap is wrapped around the animal. So why is the strap wrapped around the collar of the animal? That's called linoi. That's to adorn the animal. Onim shachim, or alternatively, if the strap is not wrapped around the collar, but rather it lays down, it stretches down in such a way that he can pull the strap and guide the animal, and that's called shmira. That means that basically, according to Rav Huna, the Mishnah is classifying two cases, two scenarios in which you can. You can take your animal out with the collar around its neck. One is nimshachim, which means you're pulling the animal. That's called shmira. You're guarding the animal, subjecting the animal. And the second is kruchim. Kruchim means linoi. Shmuel disagrees with Rav Hunomar. He thinks that you have to read the Mishnah like as in a positive clause, so to speak. That Bali Chaim Darkom Lotzeis B'Sher Yotzim Nimshachim. They can only go out Nimshachim when the Ritzua, when the strap is stretched out. It's lying down. It's not wrapped around the ring. V'Ein Yotzim Kruchim. So we read it as if it says Yotzim B'Sher. But only if it's nimshachim b'sher. V'ein yotzin kruchim. And the Mishnah is coming, lafuke, that if the collar is only there for an adornment, for noi, then since it's not mishtamer, therefore it is considered a masri. And you're not allowed to take the animal, let the animal go out with this case of kruchim, where the leash or the strap is not dangling, but rather it's wrapped around the animal. So that here we have the machlokas. Rav Huna maintains an adornment is kidarko, it's typical. You use it even during the week, and therefore it's permitted on Shabbos, it's not called Masui. Whereas according to Shmuel, Yotzim and Nimshachim should be read together. It's Yotzim Nimshachim. Only if it's Yotzim, when is it Yotzim, when you're allowed to go out with, when is allowed the animal allowed to wear the collar? Only if it's Nimshachim, which means that the leash is dangling in such a way that the animal could be pulled by holding on to the leash. However, you cannot let the animal go out with the leash wrapped around its neck, because in Shmuel's opinion, that kind of an adornment is not a typical form of kedarko during the week, and consequently, it's asur on Shabbos. It's called a masui. B'masnisa tana. Now the Gemara quotes a braisa about Bali Asher, and it says, Yotzim kruchim limoshech, that the animals could go out with the strap wrapped around the collar, but to be pulled by the leash. In other words, even though the leash is wrapped around the animal's head, but it's wrapped loosely in such a way that the bailim can put his hand in between the leash and the neck, and he's going to be able to pull the animal by the collar if need be. And in such a case, the collar around the neck of the animal is considered something for the purpose of shmira. Or alternatively, Rashi says, perhaps the leash is hanging a little bit in such a way that the owner can grasp onto the leash if necessary in order to control the animal. And this braisa supports Shmuel that a collar is only permissible if it can be used to pull the animal, to control the animal, against Rav Huna, who says that a collar is permissible even if it's merely noy, it's only an adornment. And the only question we have here is, how could Rav Huna contradict a braisa? And the Ritva says, perhaps Rav Huna didn't know the braisa. Alternatively, he holds that the braisa is contradicted by the Mishnah, that the language of the Mishnah of Yotzin, well, what was the language of the Mishnah? Let's just read it one more time. Sorry. The language of the Mishnah was Yotzim b'sher v'nimshachim b'sher. And that double language, that he could go out and could be pulled, indicate that the animal could go out with a collar even where it cannot be pulled. And therefore, we would prefer, says Rav Huna, the Mishnah over the Braisa. Now, Tosas Dima Maskel O has a different interpretation. He says, everybody agrees, Rav Huna and Shmuel, that you don't take the animal with its collar out if it's linoi. That's called a Masa. Rav Huna, who is lenient in the case of Kruchim, he holds that even when it's Karuch, there is Shmira. He still controls the animal. Because if the animal comes to run away, he can hold on to the kricha, to the straps that are rolled around the collar. And therefore you're allowed to go out with the animal. Shmuel holds, no, that if it's completely wrapped around the collar, that's not lishmira, but that's right, linoi, and therefore it's considered a masi, and it's os. So the braisa that says yotzim kruchim limoshech can be interpreted according to both Rav Huna and according to Shmuel. Rav Huna would say that kruchin means it's wrapped around berevach in such a way that he could put his hand in and he could grab onto the animal with its collar. Shmuel holds that there's a little bit of a leash that hangs down outside of the kricha, and therefore it could be moshech the animal. Amar Rav Yosef, chazina lehu leigle debe Rav Huna. I saw the calves in the house of Rav Huna. Yotzin biafsareim kruchim b'shabbos. That Rav Huna would allow the animals to go out with the straps around the collar, and that means it was linoi. We're going according to Rashi's pshat, and basically Rav Yosef's not telling me anything that I wouldn't have anticipated, because that's exactly Rav Huna's shita. And Rav Huna implemented his shita l'maisa. There's another pshat that the Ritva wants to suggest over here, that what Rav Yosef is trying to point out is that Rav Huna was not impressed by this braisa, and yet he implemented his leniency, his ruling in practice, despite the braisa. Now, we had discussed the case of a cow, and we said the cow doesn't require any shmir, any restraint. and therefore a halter would be what we called Shmira Yisera, be excessive restraint. And it was forbidden according to the Shita of Rav in the Gemara that we learned yesterday. So the question now is, how could Rav Huna, who is a Talmud of Rav, allow his calves to go out with a halter? And what we have to add here, says the Rashba, is that the young calves, not like the mature cow, are rebellious in nature, and for them a halter would not be considered excessive restraint. Ki also, the Gemara now tells us about the minhag that took place in Beis Rebbe, when the mules went out with their collars. Ki asa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Etzel to Bavel, Omar, he transmitted the following in the name of Rabbi Chanina. Mulos, which are mules, shall Beis Rebbe, Yotzos, Biafsarein, Bishabis. They go out with their halters on Shabbos. And the Gemara tries to clarify exactly how these halters were fit on the animal, on the mules, and what is Rabbi Chanina coming to teach us? Iboilahu. The Bnei Yeshiva had the following suffix. That which Rabbi Chanina reports, that the mules in Beis Rebbe would go out with their halters on Shabbos Ha'im, were there afsareim kruchim? Were the straps rolled around the collars in such a way that it was only for an adornment? Oh, or perhaps they would only go out nimshachim in a way that the leash would hang from the collar so that the owner could control the animal. And that's lishmira. Toshma, ki asa Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. Remember, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Omar, he said in the name of Rabbi Chanina, Mulos shall beis Rebbe yotzos b'afsareim kruchim b'shabbos. So the way Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda transmitted the story of Rabbi Chanina, telling the story about Rebbe, beis Rebbe, it was kruchim. It means that the leash was wrapped around the halt or the collar. So we see explicitly that even if the collar is only there for noi, nevertheless the mules are allowed to go out on Shabbos. Amrua Rabbanan Kamei de Rav Asi. From this, the original story that we had of Rav Dimi, could we possibly derive the conclusion that in Beis Rebbe, the prados, these prados, these mules, would go out even kruchim for the sake of noi? Amrua Rabbanan Kamei de Rav Asi. So first, the Chachamim told Rav Asi, Hod Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, that the Predos of Beis Rebbe were Yotzos b'Afsareim Kruchim, is Lo Tzricha. So Chachamim said to Rav Asi, we don't need this report of Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, because we can derive it from the original report of Rav Dimi, Mid Rav Dimi Nafka, from the fact that Rav Dimi told us that the mules of Beis Rebbe would go out with their halters, we could certainly derive that they were kruchim. Even though Rav Dimi didn't say that explicitly, it's implicit, and I therefore don't need Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda's transmission. If you're going to tell me that Rav Dimi was talking dafka about a case where the leash was hanging in a way that he could control the animal, and it wasn't an afsa karuch, and therefore, he's only teaching me that Rebbe holds that a mule can be controlled with its collar, and therefore it's not considered a masa, and he's not going beyond that to teach me the chiddush of kruchim, which means linoi. So then, I don't understand why Rav Dimi had to bother even reporting this. We could derive that from Rabbi Yehuda Omar Shmuel. nafka. Now, let's not get confused. We're not talking about Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda in the name of Rav Chanina. We're talking about the transmission of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, which we learned yesterday, if you remember. The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, based on the mission of Gamal, Yotze Be'afsar, V'naka Yotze's Be'chatam, which means that those are the Derech Shmira in the case of a male camel and a female camel, a male camel just with a collar around its neck, and in the case of a female collar with a ring around its nose, Umachlifin Hayu, and the Talmidim asked Lifnei Rebbe, what would be if it was Machlifim Shalzu Bezu? If the Afsar was used for the Nake, and the Chatam was used for the Gamal. And Omar Lefonov, they told Rebbe, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, this is all a chazor of what we did yesterday, that Rabbi Shmuel testified about his father and transmitted Kach Omar Abba Arba Behemus Yotzus Biafsar Asus Apered Vahagamol Vahamor. So these are the four species of animals that are controlled by the collar around its neck, the Afsar. We called it a halter, if you recall. And that's the appropriate shmira to subjugate the animal. And this, says Rabbi Shmuel, in interpreting his father's words, is coming to exclude what we call shmira yeserta. Like, for example, a gamal be'chatam. Now, a pered, a mule, is listed here amongst the four animals, the four species that are mentioned by Rabbi Yossi that go out with their halter, with their collar. Now let's assume that Rebbe accepted the words of Rabbi Yossi. We have no reason to suspect that he didn't. And he accepted and he also holds like Rabbi Yossi. If this be the case, we can already derive that Rebbe holds that a pered is Yotze B'Afsar. Now, why does Rav Dimi have to tell me, therefore, that the mules in Beis Rebbe were Yotzos Biafsa, they went out with the collar? In order to justify Rav Dimi's transmission and understand the chiddush, the nuance of what he wants to tell us that we didn't know beyond what we know, we must assume that Afsar Karuch, even if the leash is surrounding, is wrapped around the collar, nevertheless they can be Yotzos. And it's not limited to the case of Shmira, but it also includes the case of Noi. And therefore, the Rabbanon, when they told Rav Asi this whole story about Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda and his transmission of what he saw in Beis Rebbe, blah, 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 we don't need all that. We don't need Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. That the Predos, the mules of Beis Rebbe, would go even Bekaruch, even Bafsarim Kruchim. We know that already from Rav Dimi. So the Gemara now rejects this and says that we could not derive from Rav Dimi that in Beis Rebbe the mules would go out even with halters that had the leash wrapped around the halter in such a way that it's only Linoi and not Lashmira. Amar Lahu Rav Asi, Rav Asi said to the Chacham, Itzrich Lahu, I still need the story, the transmission of Rav Shmuel, or the testimony, if you will, of Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, regarding the mules of Beis Rebbe, that they were going even in Afsarim Kruchim, de'i, mid Rabbi Yehuda Nafka, if you're going to derive from Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, who brought the Suffolk in front of that was brought in by the Talmud in front of Rebbe, with regard to a Gamal that had this nose ring on it, and the proof that they brought in front of Rebbe from Rabbi Yossi, who said there are four categories of behemoth, if we only had that, and the four categories of Yossi, including the mule, the parah, is Hava. I mean, I would have thought that we could not derive any conclusions about what Rebbe holds, because it could be Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yossi, Amar Lefonov. He presented the words of Rabbi Yossi's father in front of Rebbe about the parah that goes out the Afsa, but v'Rebbe lo kibla minei. Rebbe never accepted it. Hakamash Malon. And now I need the Chiddush of Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda to tell me that the Rav Dimi I'm sorry. Why do I need the Chiddush of Rav Dimi to confirm that certainly Rebbe accepted Rabbi Yossi? In the case of a parod, the afsar is sufficient, and prados the base Rebbe yotzeis ba'afsar. And if you're going to derive everything that you know about base Rebbe from the story, the transmission of Rav Dimi, the Emir Rav Dimi, Hava Mina, Hani Mili, that's only Nimshachim. Aval Kruchim, Lo. So if I don't have Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda's testimony about the Prados of Beis Rebbe, that they were Yotzos, even Bafsorim Kruchim, I cannot derive it from Rav Dimi. And if you tell me, so why do I need the transmission of Rav Dimi? The answer is, because I'm not sure from the original story of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, whether or not, in fact, Rebbe accepted the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. And that's what Rav Dimi wanted to be Mechadish, that indeed Rebbe was on board. He accepted the principle of Rabbi Yossi, that prados or yotzos biafsar. And beyond that, whether or not, even if it's biafsar kruchim, which is linoy, as we said, where the leash is wrapped around the collar, that we don't know. And for that, we need the transmission of Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, which is explicit that in Rebbe's house, they would wrap the leash around the collar, and even though it was linoy, nevertheless, it's not considered masa. Now, we're going to go back to a discussion here about the Mishnah regarding share as far as Tumah is concerned. And the Mishnah had stated that Mazen Aleh Mechatos V'Tov Leon Bimkoman. In other words, you have this collar around the neck of the animal, and you need tefillah on the collar if it were contracted Tumas Oel. And you'll need also in Tumas Oel Hazah of Mechatos. And we can allow this to go on, says the Mishnah, even while the animal is wearing the collar. We don't have to remove the collar. So Gemara asks the following kasha, Lememra Dibnei Kibule Tumaninu. First of all, the Mishnah operates with the premise that the share is susceptible to Kapolas Tuma. Otherwise, you know, why does the Mishnah have to deal with the question of how to purify the share? It must be that the share was Makabel Tuma. Vatnan, how do we reconcile that with the Mishnah in Kalim? The Mishnah says, Tabas, when a man is wearing a ring for beauty purposes, to adorn himself, it's a piece of jewelry, is Tmea. That is susceptible to Tumah, and that is the same din as a Tachshit. And we have a principle in Masech Kalim that Tachshite Adam Mekablim Tumah, that even jewelry is included in the parash of Tumah. And that's derived from Melchemes Midjan in the parashim Bamidbar Lamed Aleph. Etz Ada Vitamid Vitamid Tabas Agil Vekumaz, about which the Torah says, "Kol Horeg Nefesh Vekol Nega Vechalal Tischato Biyom Hashlishi Ubiyom Hashvi Atem Vishavechem." So the jewelry here, the tzamid, the tabas, etc., were all during the course of Melchemes Midjan, Mekabel Tumas Mes. Then the Mishnah in Kalim goes on and says, V'tabas Behema, if you have some sort of a ring for the animal, and that would be a perfect example of share around its neck, V'kalim, and let's say you have other kinds of rings that you use to adorn utensils. Like, for example, let's say you have a utensil that has a handle to it. So you put a ring around the handle, and that beautifies the kli, the handle. The sharkal atabos, and other kinds of rings that you put around doors, and so forth and so on. Tahoros, the Mishnah says they're not susceptible to kabbalas tumah. They're not included in the din of tachshit, which you derive from the parasha Milchemes Midyan. They don't receive, they're not susceptible to tumah, because the parasha of Midyan is only teaching me tachshit shel adam, but not tachshit shel behemah. Now in our Mishnah here, in Masechta Shabbos, we understood that the share is mekabel tumah, and the Mishnah addresses the question of how to be metayer the share. And yet, we see clearly from the Mishnah Kelim that there's no such thing as a tachshit of a behemah. So the Gemara offers now two answers. How does our Mishnah imagine that the share around an animal's neck is mekabel tumah? Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, this is the first answer. Share is not mekabel tumah. But our Mishnah is talking about darchei taras share b'boin minoy adam linoy behemah. So let's say, for example, you had a ring that first was being used and worn by a man, a human being, and it contracted tumah while it was designated as a piece of jewelry for a man, for a human being. Afterwards, the owner of the ring decided to change its yud, its designation, and he decided to use it as an adornment for an animal. It still is tameh. And now you have to be metayer because it received tumah while it was a tachshit adam. And that's what our Mishnah is coming to teach us, that you could be metayer even without taking the collar and the ring off of the animal. Now the Gemara adds another teretz. V'Rav Yosef Omar, it is true that a share that's being used only to adorn the animal, that's its total function, is not included in the tachshit that's mekabel tumah in the parsha. That's only tachshit adam. But the share of our Mishnah, hoil the adam moshech bahem es habehemah, the owner of the animal is using it to pull the animal, to control the animal, and therefore, he puts his hands into the share, and he uses it to pull the animal, this ring around the animal's neck. Is nimtza shukli amishamish adam? It's now a utensil that man is using and benefiting from, and therefore, it is susceptible to kabbalas tumah. And we're going to derive this, we'll see in a moment, in a braisa. But first, let's just point out that a kli is mekabel tumah, and we see this again in the parasha Milchemes Midyan, Bamidbar Lamed Aleph, with regard to the sholol, the booty that they took. It says kol kli maaseh, and we're going to derive from this that anything that's listed, enumerated as sholol in the Milchemes is mekabel tumah. As it says, kol horeg nefesh v'kol nega b'chalal, kol nogeh b'chalal tischato b'yom ha'shlishi yom ha'shvi. It means that everything was tamei tumas mes that was taken as sholol, but only if it's a kli ha'mishamish adam, it serves man. If the kli is only functional for the behemah, it's not mekabel tumah. But this share that we're talking about, so says Rav Yosef in our Mishnah, was mishamish not just the behemah, because in such a case it would not be susceptible to tumah, but it's meshamish adam in order to facilitate meshichas a behemah, that he could be able to use the share to drag the animal. So we see from Rav Yosef that he holds like Shmuel in the Gemara of an Aleph, that our Mishnah is talking about a share which is limshochas a behemah, not a share abolinoi. And Milo Sanya, didn't we learn in a braisa, makel shel behema, if you have a stick that's used by the owner of the animal, lirdos es hagomol ves hanaka, in order to control the animal, sometimes you have to hit the animal to get it to move, etc., etc. And It's made of metal. Imu shel mateches is makabel tumu. Now, when he says mateches, dafka mateches made of metal, because a makil, a stick, doesn't have what we call a base kibul, it doesn't have any receptacle to it. And with regard to clay mateches, the Mishnah Kelim establishes that a metal keli is makabel tumu if it doesn't have a base kibul. If you're talking about a kliyeh, something, a utensil that's made of wood, it's not makabel tumu unless it has a base kibul. And here we're talking about a stick, so it has to be specifically a stick made of metal. And therefore it's makabel tumu. So this is the price of makel shel behemah shel mateches, and the Gemara asks the following question. Matam, why is this makel makabel tumu? If you're going to say it's a kli that's only mishamish behemah, it's not makabel tumu. And the answer is, it's a kli that's mishamish adam, hol vi adam roda bahen, because the man uses it to punish the animal or move the animal and so forth and so on. And therefore, chinami, by analogy, in the case of a share, which can be used by an adam to be moshech the animal, hol vi adam moshech bahen, therefore becomes a kli hamishamish es adam, and therefore it's makabel tumu. So just to summarize, we have these two answers of Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha and Rabbi Yosef, that number one, we had a collar that was originally a ring or so that was usually used to service man, and at that point it was makabel tumu. Later on he changed it and he used it for the animal. Or since, as Rabbi Yosef would have it, he's moshek the behemah with this share, therefore it's a kli hamishamish es ha'adam, and it's makabel tumu. Now, we're here on the top of Daf Nun Beis, Amud Beis, and we're up to Vitovlon Bimkomon, which is the two dots approximately 6-7 lines down from the top. And the Mishnah says that you can allow for tvila regarding the collars around the animal's neck, even bimkomon in their place when they're around the animal's neck. So the share around the animal's neck, this collar, was makabel tumu, and now he's coming to be matired through tevila. He can be matbel it even while it's around the animal's neck. And now the Gemara wants to know, in this case, how does it work out that there's no chatzitza between the share and the water of the mikvah? L'chora, the water can't get in underneath the share because it's tied around the animal's neck. So the Gemara asks, "Ve ha'ika chatzitza?" In other words, the share is what we call kvua tabas sheba nesuna retzua biyad habaylim vehimu dekes bechoska benekev sheba amayim enem yichol likanes b'mokam achibur. So let's explain the Gemara's kasha about chatzitza. The Gemara is saying that there's a ring on the collar which is firmly attached in such a way that the water cannot flow and enter between the ring and the collar. The waters in the mikvah have to reach the entire surface of that which is being immersed in order for the tefillah to be valid. So the Gemara is referring now to a ring, a tabas, that sometimes can be removed from a collar and used separately. So therefore the collar and the ring are considered two different objects. And therefore there's a need for the water to flow between the ring and the collar. And that's what we said before, that since there's a tabas kvua bashir, there's a ring that is permanently set in the collar, and around, you know, inside the ring you have the leash, so that this ring is so tightly tied around the collar that the water cannot enter into what we call the makom chibur, which means between the ring and the collar. So we have ring around the collar here. Okay, you didn't laugh. And if there's ring around the collar, how are you going to get the water in between the ring and the collar? This is called a chatzitza. So Gemara answers, Amar Rabbi Ami, Bisheritchon, which means he took a hammer and he hit on this collar in such a way that he widened the nekev, the opening, where the tabas is kvua, in such a way that the tabas, this ring, is not tightly attached to the collar, and the water can actually penetrate between the ring and the collar. So when he pounds this collar with a hammer, and he widens the hole into which the ring was inserted, then the water can enter into the makom achibur. There's no chatzitza. Now the Gemara analyzes this answer of Rav Asi based on the two answers that we gave before about how the shear is makabel tumah. Lema Rabbi Ami Kirav Yosef Svirale. Rav Yosef had offered the answer that the shear is mekabel tuma because it's a kli that's meshamish l'sa'odah for the purpose of dragging the animal. Therefore, even when he widens the nekev after the tuma, that itself would not be metayer the share, because it still is fit for its original purpose, namely for dragging the animal with the leash. So therefore, the Tanava Mishnah wants to answer the question, how can you be Mitar Mituma? However, if you'll, integrate Rabbi Ami with Rabbi Yitzchak, and Rabbi Yitzchak said that Bibon Minoy Odom Linoy Behem, the shear was originally used for the adornment of a person, it was a ring for a human being, and that's when it was Makabel Tumah. Afterwards, the Baal changed the yud, and he decided to use it as a noy for his behemoth. And its original Tumah is still there, even though he moved it, but he hasn't yet been tovel it. Then we'd have to ask the following question, Kevon de Ritchon is Ovid Bumaisa. Now that he opened, with the hammer, he widened the nekev, he's now done an action to change it from noy adam to noy behema. In other words, parcha le tumah minayhu, the tumah now dissipates from the share, and he doesn't need to be mitired because he's actually done an action by widening the hole that clearly changes the yud of the kli. Its tuma is totally dependent upon its original designation as noy adam when it was makabel tuma, but now it's no longer something that would beautify adam. It can no longer be considered a tachshit for an adam. So he says the following, when he hammers out the collar in the way that we described it, Ritchon, then he performs an act, he makes a physical change in the collar, and the tumah should now depart, and it doesn't need tefillah. And we're going to prove this from a Mishnah in Kalim. And basically, what we're saying is that he mamish made a change in the object in such a way that the kli is a new kli, it has a new identity, and its tumah is just flies away, so to speak. This now we learned in the Mishnah in Kalim, Kol HaKalim Yordim Lidei Tumasim V'machshava, V'ein Olim Mi Tumasim Ela B'Shinu Maisen. In other words, if you're asking whether or not a utensil is susceptible to Kabbalah's tumah, the answer is all you need is machshava. So for example, the craftsman who created the kli fashioned it, if he considers that this is complete and it's ready, let's say, to be marketed, then it's makabel tumah. It has the same kli. If it hasn't yet reached this stage, for example, he wants to engrave it, he wants to sand it down, then it doesn't contract tumah. This is sugyan chulin chaf beis. No, I'm sorry, chaf hei. Now, our Mishnah teaches us a certain qualification of this law, that sometimes even an incomplete utensil, even though it hasn't yet undergone a physical improvement, it becomes susceptible to tumah. And how does it reach that status? Through the machshava of the craftsman. If the craftsman mentally has made a decision that he doesn't want to add anything to the utensil, that for his purpose it serves its purpose and its use in this unfinished state, then that's enough to generate a shame kli, and therefore it's now susceptible to Kabbalah's tumah. But ein olam mitumasam el mishinu masa. But you cannot remove the tumah unless there's a physical change to the object. And now, what we're speaking about is a kli that already became tumah, and the question of whether a kli is susceptible to contracting tumah. In both cases, we need a physical change. But if the kli does undergo a physical change, then if that physical change renders it unfit for its original use, the kli ceases to be a kli, and it's no longer susceptible to tumah. And if it's tameh, its tumah, as we said before, flies away. So let's say you have a utensil, a kli that already became tumah. Now he has a physical change that renders the utensil unfit for its previous purpose. In this case, that the kli, through a maisa, undergoes such a radical change, then it loses its tumah. Now, if you want to talk about a kli that's not yet tameh, and it's really just, susceptible to tumah, then you need even a less drastic physical change. Let's say, for example, the craftsman began to work on his utensil, and he had decided that it was finished. And now he decides, no. He wants to sand it down, he wants to decorate it. He demonstrates that from his perspective, the utensil is not complete. It hasn't reached its final stage of completion, and therefore cannot be makabel tumah. So that there's a difference between the two categories that we're dealing with. If we're talking about a kli that already was makabel tumah, and you want to undermine the tumah, then you'll need a physical change such that it's unfit for its original use. In the case of defining a kli as being royal makabel tumah, it's susceptible to tumah, and that was because the craftsman decides he doesn't need to sand it down, then the very moment that he decides that he wants to sand it down, and he demonstrates that his utensil has not reached the final stage, then he now makes it non-susceptible to kabel tumah. When he begins the process of sanding it down, this kli would not be makabel tumah until he reaches that final stage when it's completely sanded down. So, for example, let's say a person decides to use a piece of leather as a mat, which is a kli. The very thought that he has, that he wants to use it as a mat, is enough to generate the status of this piece of leather as being royal makabel tumah, becomes susceptible to tumah. Now, let's say he changes his mind, and he decides he wants to use the leather for sandals, to make a sandal out of it. Then he starts cutting the leather. Now, once he starts cutting the leather, this piece of leather, which before he changed his mind and started cutting it, was susceptible to Kabbalah's tumah. Now if he does A plus B, he changes his mind, he doesn't want to use it as a mat, he wants to use it as a sandal, and B, he's already begun the process of cutting the leather, so now he was mafkira the Kabbalah's tumah from this kli. Again, when he finishes and cuts the leather and is perfect, that's something else. But in that middle stage where he's decided he's not happy with it as is, as a piece of leather for a mat, he wants to rather use it as a, you know, to make a shoe out of it, and he's already begun to implement his machshava, and he starts cutting the leather to make it into a shoe, at that point, it loses its previous status of being royal kabbal tuma. It'll regain that status as a full-fledged kli for kabbal's tuma at the point to which he completes the process of cutting that piece of leather. Now, by analogy, when we get back to our Mishnah, in the case of a collar, it became tame when it was designated as a tachshit shel adam. And Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha had told us that subsequently he used it as an adornment for an animal, but he hasn't changed anything. He didn't make a physical change in this ring around, you know, around the neck. And now he has to be mitarid, he has to be tovelit. Now, let's say he went ahead and he hammers it out, like Rav Ami said before. Now it would no longer require tvila. It's parchale tumasa. Because once it hammers out, it loses its noy, its beauty. It's no longer fit for its use for a noy le adam. And memele, it becomes tar. So now we have a problem. Because our Mishnah says that we need tara. The Mishnah actually addresses the question how exactly we mitire it in the tefillah and the whole process. Therefore, Rav Ami's explanation of our Mishnah cannot be reconciled with Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. And now the Gemara wants to present the possibility of reconciling Rav Ami with Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. And the answer is Tavrala ki Rabbi Yehuda. If we accept and we assume Rabbi Ami accepts Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar, who formulates the following principle, Maisa letaken lav maisahu, which literally translates as a constructive act, is not deemed as an action to rid the object of its tuma. Any action that's constructive, and again, we said before that the object becomes Torah through any physical change that renders it unfit for use. But in Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, if the physical change includes some element of improvement, it somehow is letaken, then it does not remove the tumah from the object. And that's called maisa letaken lav maisa. It's not a maisa that would undermine the status of tuma. Desanya, we learned in a brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo amar shinui maisa letaken elo lekalkel. When the Mishnah says that through a shinui maisa it removes the tuma, the Mishnah spoke of something that is a mekalkel. It's not constructive physical change, but it's pure destructive physical change. And only a destructive physical change can remove the tuma from the cheftza, from the object. Now, in the case of hammering out a collar, that's a constructive action. And why is that? Because it renders the collar fit for an animal. And if that be the case, the collar remains tame and requires tefillah. And therefore, if we assume that Rav Ami accepted the principle of Rabbi Yehuda, and even though Rav Ami spoke about the fact of Bishe Ritchon, that he hammered it out, that would not remove the status of Tuma from this collar, because it was a constructive action insofar as it facilitates the collar being fit for an animal. And the Gemara now gives another possible resolution to the problem in terms of chatzitza, in other words, the mikvah water and the collar. We spoke about the ring around the collar. For masnisa tani, in the brisa we saw bimechulolim, that our Mishnah is dealing with collars that have wide holes. and is a gap between the ring and the collar through which the water can pass. Now the Gemara at the end of Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph had quoted a Mishnah with regard to the Tumah of rings. Shal Talmud Echad Migolil HaElyon Es Rabbi Eliezer. The Braisa teaches us that a student from the Upper Galilee asked Rabbi Eliezer, Shamati Shacholkim Bein Tabas LeTabas, that there's some distinction between one type of a ring and another. But I don't know what that distinction is. Amar lo, so Rabbi Eliezer tried to clarify this. Shema lo shamat el linyan Shabbos. Perhaps this distinction was only relevant to Shabbos. And now we're talking about the malacha of transferring. And here there's a difference between a ring with a seal and a ring without a seal. And what we mean is, let's say a woman is wearing a ring in a Rishus HaRabim, and the question is whether there's a violation here of a Doraisa, and the answer is if it has a seal. If it doesn't have a seal, then it's only a Darabana. Okay, this is going to be a sugya in the next perek of Bameh HaIsha Yotzeis. Tabas Sheyesh Aleha Chosam Eino tachshid li ishal amaso vasura min haTorah lotzis bo b'shabbos tabas she'eino le'achosem itachshid li ishal v'lo maso v'lachem min haTorah muteres lotzis bo b'shabbos. And as we said before, chachomim osu lotzis af b'tabas she'eino le'achosem shema tovo lasira me'oleh b'shus harabim b'derech halichosik de laroso l'chaberto v'tavir es haTabas harabim b'shus harabim Shalom b'derech tachshid el b'derech maso v'tavar isur b'kach. So all this is a sugya on daf tzadi vav amid beis. De'ile inyan tuma. This is what Rabbi Eliezer explains to that Talmud from the Goliel. As far as tuma is concerned, to be makabel tuma, it's impossible to make this distinction between one tabas and another tabas. They both have the same din, and there's no distinction between them. Whether or not the tabas is yesh oleh chosim, tabas she'ein oleh chosim, they're both mekabel tuma, and that's going to be a braisa later on in daf nun tes amud beis. And even though a tabas she'yesh oleh chosim, we said, is not a tachshit, and that's why, with regard to otzobish sarabim, you'd be chayav for a doraisa if you wore this tabas sheyesh oleh chosim, and the kabbalas tumah here is therefore is not midin tachshit, but nevertheless the kabbalas tumah is midin kli, and this tabas is mishamveshes kekli lachtom bo. You could use it as a kli in order to apply the signature. And now the Gemara is going to ask Akasha, leinyan tumah davida achasi. Is it true that all types of rings have the same din as far as Kabbalah's tomb is concerned? Vatnan, we have a mission in Kalim, Tabas, Odom, a ring which is functioning as an adornment for a person, Tmeya, Vitabas, Behema, Vikalim, Vishar Kol Tabos, Tahoros. So if the Tabas is not Noila Odom, but rather it's, let's say, a share le tzavra behema, or some sort of tabas to beautify kelim. Like we said, we put it on the handle of a kli, or other kinds of tabos that are put on a delis. Is all these are not makabel tuma. So we see that there's a distinction between different types of tabos, as far as Kabbalah's tumah is concerned. How did Rabbi Eliezer say that there's no distinction between them? And the Gemara answers, Ki kamar le'iu nami. Even Rabbi Eliezer, when he told this Talmud that as far as Kabbalah's tumah, there's one din for all types of tabos, he was talking about tabas asuyo linoi ha'odam, kamar le. Any tabas that serves as an adornment for man, whether or not it has a seal on it, or it doesn't have a seal on it, As far as that's concerned, David Achas, all the Tabos have the same din. It's only as far as Hotzos Shabbos with regard to Adam. Here we make a distinction between a Tabas Adam that has a Chosem, that's considered a Masa, and if it doesn't have a Chosem, then it's a Tachshit. So now the Gemara asks another Kasha. As far as Adam is concerned, even a Tabas that is an adornment, a piece of jewelry for a person, is Vidovido Achasi, Vasanya. Are you going to tell me that all Tabos have the same din as far as Kabbalah's tomb is concerned? As we saw, Rabbi Eliezer made that statement. Vatanya, we have a Braisa, Tosefta, and Kalim. And it says in the Braisa, Tabash is Kina, Lachgar Ba Masna, Vachain Likshar Ba Bank Seifa of Tahora. Velo Amru Tabas Tmeya Elo Tabashal Etzba Bilvat. So we have various categories of rings. For example, we have one that was used Lachgar Bas Masnov as far as a belt is concerned. And he puts on the front of the strap a kind of a ring. Or alternatively, he has a ring that he wears between his sleeves, back on his back. And in all these cases, the Mishnah says, or the Braisa says, it's not Mekabel Tumah, because this is not Mishamesh Es HaAdam, but rather it's Mishamesh Es Begadav. So let's just summarize. We have a ring that one prepared as a belt to gird his loins. We have one to tie his sleeves between his shoulders. And this is a band that's worn around the sleeve near the shoulders, and it serves to gather in the sleeve. These are pure, in other words, they're not capable of Kabbalah's Tumah. And the reason for that is this type of a ring is only a ring of a utensil for the belt or for the garment, but it's not for an Adam. Lo Amru Tumah Ela Shel Etzba Bilvad, a ring of a person that he wears around his finger, and that's Mekabel Tumah. Now, in the case of an animal collar, which the Gemara above classified as a utensil for human use, because people use it to carry, to subjugate, to control the animal. So there's something that the human being uses actively and something that just keeps something, a garment, in place. Like, for example, this ring for a belt or ring for a garment around his shoulder area and so forth and so on. In those cases, a person is not actively using those rings. It's just left in place. It holds the belt or garment in position. Masha'enkein, in the case of an animal collar where the person is grabbing actively the animal by pulling its collar, that's already Tashmishal Adam, and that's Mekabel Tumah. Now, it could be that you'd have a case where even a ring of a belt or a garment is Mekabel Tumah. For example, let's say the ring is joined to the belt or the garment, and it becomes part of a garment, part of a utensil, then it's a chibur, and it receives, it contracts Tumah together with the kli itself. But in any event, we see clearly from this braisa that there's this distinction between different types of rings that a person wears, and whether they're Mekabel Tumah or not. And, you know, there are rings that he wears attached to his garments, his belts, etc. And there's a ring that he wears around his finger, which is purely linoi. And the latter is Mekabel Tumah. So how is it that Rabbi Eliezer says there's no distinction between different types of tabos as far as Tashmishi Adam are concerned? And the Gemara answers, Ki Kamar Lahu Iunami Debi Etzba Ka'amar Le. Notice Rabbi Eliezer, when he said that to that Talmud, that as far as Kabbalah's Tumah, there's one din for all types of rings, he was talking about rings that you wear on your finger. He wasn't talking about rings that are used for garments. And with regard to rings that he used on his finger, then all rings are included. Whereas, in contrast, as far as Hotzos Shabbos is concerned, there's a fundamental difference between a ring that he wears around his finger that has a seal on it and one that does not have a seal on it. The Gemara now raises the following objection. V'di etzpa do v'do achasi, and with regard to a ring that a man wears around his finger, is it true that all types of tabos have the same din as far as kabbalah's tuma? V'atnan, we have a mission in Kalim, tabashal mateches v'chosoma shel almog tmeya, which means the following: that if the chosem, the seal that is kavua, it's set into the tabas, is shel almog. Almog is a kind of a tree, an almog tree, which is usually a type of a cedar tree. So the Mishnah is telling us that if you have a ring of metal and the signet itself, the seal itself, is made of wood, then it's makabel tumah. But in a case of hishal almog, if the ring itself is made of wood, and the chosama, and the signet itself is made of mateches, then it's tahora. And the reason for this is because we always determine the nature of the kli as far as tumah is concerned by its ikar. If the ikar is eitz, then we have a real rule that we mentioned earlier today, that a kli eitz, a wooden kli, if it doesn't have a base kibul, it's not makabel tumah, it doesn't have a receptacle. Therefore, with regard to a ring, clearly it doesn't have a receptacle. So now we have to differentiate between two types of rings. There's one ring that the ikar is mateches, and with regard to kli mateches, you don't need a base kibul and it's susceptible to kamatuma, as opposed to a ring that's made of wood, where it's a kli eitz, and a kli eitz is not makabel tumah, in this case of a ring, because it doesn't have a base kibul. So once again, how could Rabbi Eliezer say to this Talmud that there's no distinguish between different types of rings as far as tumah is concerned? And the Gemara answers, Kika Amarle Iunami, even Rabbi Eliezer, when he gave his answer to the Talmud and he said there's no difference between different types of tabos, he meant tabos kula shel mateches kamali. That's what he was referring to, that if these different kinds of tabos as far as tumah is concerned are made primarily of metal, then there's no difference between one ring and another ring. But as far as Shabbos is concerned, there'll be a fundamental difference between a ring that has a signet and a ring that does not. Now, once the Gemara brings these distinctions between different types of rings, the Gemara goes into a discussion about different types of machtin, which means different types of needles. So let's see if we can understand now the question that the students is going to ask Rabbi Eliezer. Shamati shecholkim be'machat l'machat. So this Talmud from the Galil said to Rabbi Eliezer that he heard that there's some distinction between one type of needle and another type of needle. And the word machat in Hebrew can refer to both needles or pins. We're going to translate it here as needles. Okay. Amar lei, so Rabbi Eliezer responds to the Talmud, Shema lo shamata elo le'inyan Shabbos, te'ilin tuma dovid da achasi. As far as Shabbos is concerned, we're going to have a discussion later on Daf Nun Zayin, with regard to two different types of needles that you carry from one rishus to another, and whether you violated the raisa of hotzah. There's something called a machat nekuva, and then there's a machat she'ena nekuva. A machat nekuva is subject and included in masa, which means that if you carry this machat nekuva, which is the kind of machat that you use for sewing, and it has its hole in it. In such a case, then the law is that you violate Meleches Hotzah Da'oraisa. Okay, so that's one type of machat. And as far as... so now... we call it a sewing needle, and it has actually the technical word in English is an eye, it has an eye in it, and if she carries it out into a Rishus HaRabim, she violates Meleches Hotzah Doraisa. Now we have a different type of a needle that has no eye in it, and that's a decorative pin, and that becomes a Tachshit, and therefore it's not a Masa, and you would not violate Hotzah on Shabbos. As far, again, there may be a Darabonon here, because we may be afraid that she'll take it out of her garment, which she uses it as a decorative pin, etc., etc., and carry it. However, as far as Tumah, in contrast, there is no difference between one needle that has a hole and eye in it, and the other that doesn't have an eye in it. Bein Nekuva, Bein Ein Nekuva, Makabelas Tumah. They're both considered a Kli Amashamish Adam, one for the sake of weaving, and the other for the sake of removing a coat, or perhaps as jewelry. So the Gemara now asks the following question, Le'ula'inyan Tumah Dovada Achas, is that really true that all types of needles are the same? Well, Tanan, we have a Mishnah in Kalim, Machat Shenital Chora, O Uktsa, Tahora, a needle whose eye or point has been removed, is not makabel tumah. Why? Because it's not fit for its previous use. So it loses its status of a kli, and its tumah flies into the air, as we said. Only a complete, perfect needle can become tumah. So we see that even with regard to Kabbalah's tumah, not all needles are the same. And the Gemara answers, Kika Amale, when Rabbi Eliezer responded to that Talmud, that as far as Tumah, there's no difference between one needle and another, that's Bishlema. He was referring to a complete, perfect needle that is not broken, and it's not missing its eye or its point. Nothing has been removed, and therefore it's Tumah. And there's no difference between a Machat that has an eye and a Machat that doesn't have an eye. So Gemara asks the question, Af b'machat shleima, even with regard to a complete needle, is Davido achasi? Is it really true that all machtim have the same exact din as far as tumah is concerned? As Rabbi Eliezer told the Talmud, V'atnan, we have a mission again in Kalim, Machat shehelsa chaluda, the needle that has become rusty, is im hachaluda ma'akev esatfira, if it's so rusty that it obstructs the sewing and it's no longer fit for its original function as a sewing needle, tahora, it's not susceptible to kabos tuma, it's no longer ru'il malachta v'im lav. But if, even though it's rusty, the rust is not so profound that it obstructs the sewing, and it still could be used for its original purpose, the ena chaluda monas es hatfira, is tmea, then it's a full-fledged kli, and it's makabel tumah. The amri de bei Rabbi Yanai, and they told us in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yanai, that when the Mishnah says that if it's a rusty needle and it obstructs the tfira, it's not makabel tumah, who, that only applies sherishuma nikar, which means only where the impression is discernible. And that means that even if the needle is usable, if it's not considered a utensil, it's not susceptible to tumah, unless its shape is still discernible beneath the rust. Midubar biofen sheroshem achaluda nikar al gabe habeget vizu minias hatvir shomra mishnah. So once again, we find that there's a difference between different categories of machtin, even if they're shleimim, as far as Kabbalah's tumah is concerned. Because it all depends on whether Rishuma Nikar or Ein Rishuma Nikar, according to Rabbi Yanai. That if we're talking about Roshem Achaluda Nikar, then in such a case, since it's so corrodible that its shape is no longer discernible beneath the rust is so covering, even though it still can function, nevertheless, it loses its status as a kli, and it's not makabel tumah. So how did Rabbi Eliezer say that there's no difference between one category of a machat and another category of a machat. The Gemara answers, Kika Amarle, when Rabbi Eliezer addressed the Talmud as far as Kabbalah's Tumah, he said there's no difference, is Beshifa, which means he was talking about a needle that was polished, and one type of Tumah is the same as the other, if it's a polished tumah, needle, which means there's no rust on the tumah. So the Gemara asks, and even in the case of Shifa, v'b'shifa, if it's absolutely, as we said, polished and there's no rust, is David or Achasi, or all machtin equal in the eyes of the law? For Atanya, we have a brisa, which is going to be quoted later on in the Gemara and Daf Kuf Chav Gimel, that machat bein nekuva ubein ein nekuva mutar l'taltala b'shabbos, and it means that within Rishus HaYochid you're allowed to carry a needle from place to place, whether it has an eye or it doesn't have an eye. And there's no Isur Muktzah, because even if it doesn't have an eye, you can still use it, for example, to take out a thorn from your body. V'lo amrinon, nekuva, and when do we say that if it has an eye, it has a different din as far as its status than a needle that doesn't have an eye? El inyan tuma bilvat, which means that if it has an eye, then the needle is susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. If it doesn't have an eye, it's not susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. So we see clearly that there's a distinction between different types of machtin, even if they don't have any rust on them, and they're perfectly polished, as far as Kabbalah's Tumah. How did Rabbi Eliezer say that there's no difference between them? So at this point, the sugi understands that if a needle has no eye, it's just a pin, then it's not considered a utensil as far as Kabbalah's tomb is concerned. So the Gemara says, "Hatirgama Abaye aliba de Rava begolme." So Abaye interprets this brisa based on the Shita of Rava, and Rava says that a machat whose pin, or shall we say the eye or the oketz, the sharp point at the end is been removed, and then it loses the shame kli, and it's also betil to mishum mukta. The Bryce is talking about golme. Golme is unfinished needles, like a raw material. Shadayin lo nigmar malachton. And niktzitza me'amachat, shemimenu osin es hamachtin, vu omed linokva. So this all has to be interpreted, but let's just get the basic principle down. Ubi ofen ze chilka abraisa bendini mukta b'shabbos bendini kabbalas tuma. So herein lies the contrast in the braisa between tuma and Shabbos, and that is, according to this interpretation of Rava, when we're talking about unfinished needles. Now, let's say you have a needle which has an eye, but the eye has not yet been formed. So it's not what we call a finished needle. Such a needle is not susceptible to tuma, because the Torah says in Parshas Melchemes Midjan, in Bamidbar, Kli Maisa. Maisa means it's a fashioned utensil. A utensil that's completely finished for its originally intended purpose. So now you intended to create an eye in this needle, so it could serve for weaving, and you haven't completed it yet, so it's not called a kli as far as tum is concerned. With regard to mukta, this condition does not apply. And a person might change his mind, and he decides to leave the needle in its current state without an eye, and he wants to use it for removing thorns from his body. And therefore it has the status of a kli with regard to mukta. So as far as Kabbalah's tum is concerned, since his intention is l'nakva, he's going to make the eye, that's called lo nigmar melachto, and it's not makabal tumah. Rabbi Eliezer spoke about a machat shenigmar melachto. It already has a nekev, it already has the eye in it. And it has a full-fledged tzuras machat, it's a complete kli. And here he says, that's true whether it's nekuva or ain't it nekuva, it's always makabal tumah, depending upon what his purpose is. So if his purpose is to use it as a weaver's stitching a needle, then he needs the nekev. Otherwise, it's not makabel tum, it's not a kli. That's why it doesn't fulfill its original purpose. Okay. And now, we're going to say that if it's not nekuva, but it was designated for other purposes, like lahotzi bo coats, then it has a complete shame kli. And therefore it's makabel tumah, even though he hasn't completed it, because as far as he's concerned, he's completed it. As far as mukta is concerned, even if he hasn't completed it, that's irrelevant, because he can always decide to use it in a different way. And it's not mukta. Even if he originally was trying to create a needle with an eye in it for stitching purposes, but now he can change his mind and he wants to use it for removing a coat, and he doesn't need an eye in it, and therefore it's not mukta. And this brings us to the Mishnah on Daf Nun Beis, Amid Beis, four lines up from the bottom, Yirtz Hashem, in tomorrow's Shia.